You are listening
to the Fly Fishing 97 podcast.
I have kind of two curved hook points. I wonder if I can just like hook either the rod or some of the line. And so I'm jigging for a fly rod. I'm like, this is never going to work. But you never know. Dr. Slick is wonderful, so I'm sure they won't let me down. And and sure enough, about 5 minutes of jigging, and I bring up her, it's a Rapunzel Shakespeare rod. So that was a Rapunzel. Birthday gift to her.
All right.
Rapunzel. So it's pink, and it's white, and it's just, it's beautiful. Yeah, beautiful fly rod, or a beautiful fishing rod for a four-year-old. So she's ecstatic. Dada, you got my fishing rod. Yay. And then now she's like, okay, game on. Like, it's her turn to catch a fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then so, you know, fast forward maybe about another half an hour or so, and that kind of wears off. And Dada, I'm hungry. I'm like, well, you just dummied a half bag of cheese puffs and an apple and a cheese string and fruit snacks. I'm like, why are you still hungry? So, okay, well, Dad's going to fire up his camping stove, and we're going to make some gourmet hot dogs for the ladies and perfect. Give them the true guiding experience, right? And then as I'm just getting the hot dogs ready, my wife says, oh, Frankie, your bobber's down, your indicator's down. And then so she quickly reacts and sets the hook and has Frankie hold on to the rod, and Frankie's got her little pet unicorn in one hand. She's trying to reel with the other hand. I was like, Frankie, put down your unicorn for right now, or, you know, get two hands on that rod. And yeah, long story short, then she does a great job of reeling it in, and I captured everything on video. So as I net the fish, I've never heard sounds out of this child. Just, you want to hear pure excitement and elation from a four-year-old catching a fish. It's by far the best fishing moment of my life. Like, I've caught a few fish in my day, but that one trumps them all, just seeing that pure form of excitement.
Welcome to the Fly Fishing 97 podcast, featuring interviews with passionate people within the fly fishing industry. We focus on guides, conservation, resort managers, gear, and talented fly tiers, bringing usable information to fly fishers. The Fly Fishing 97 podcast is brought to you by The Fly Crate.
TheFlyCrate.com is your source for all things fly fishing. The Fly Crate offers a monthly fly club. We select patterns every month for your home waters. With membership, you'll receive flies created to match the hatch in your area, along with the Fly Crate's guide magazine, the convenience of having flies delivered right to your door, some sweet stickers. Discover new patterns and start stocking your fly boxes now. TheFlyCrate.com.
Here's your host, Mark Hopley.
Welcome to this edition of the Fly Fishing 97 podcast. We're really happy you joined us. And we've been, I don't want to say lazy, but we've definitely been up to a lot of things lately and not doing a lot of shows. And we're definitely trying to get back on that train, missing it a lot. And I thought we better reach out to one of our good buddies, Brandon Molzan. We have on the line out of Vernon, British Columbia, Canada. He is Tying Is My Vice on YouTube. Check him out. Pro staff at Dr. Slick, tying instructor and guide at Interior Fly Fishing Company. Pro staff at Semperfly, Togans. It's a long list, Brandon. I'm just going to go through a few here. with Sage, Rio, Reddington, and Broken Tippet, to name a few. Did I miss anybody here we should give a shout out to?
No, you did well there, Mark. Thank you. Yeah.
How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. Yeah, it's been been a blur this winter off season, if you will, has been a busy one, just networking and getting some fly boxes ready. And it's super exciting. I've had a few days on the still waters already this season. We're chatting in early April, and it's good to scratch that itch and let the rust come off my casting stroke. So far, so good.
So why don't you walk us through your winter, because I know you've been busy working at your day job, but then also your time flies. And I know you're doing shows and whatnot. Walk us through what you got up to this winter.
Yeah. I mean, how long do we want to make this episode? It's been a good time. I'll kind of go back to sort of the fall, and last season was a really cool breakout season for me, as far as just meeting some quality people, making some great friendships and connections. And I had a number of good fishing trips with Togan's Fly Shop. So the previous owners there, they really took me under their wing, and we had some great times on the water, and I got to meet some people that were up from the States. So they had their big nationals competition, the women's championship there. Mm-hmm. And going back that far, if I can remember back, they I got a nice email from Kathy Ruddock and John Wilkinson and Ken Woodward, and they had asked if I would whip up some scud patterns for the ladies team for the national championship there. Awesome. And That was an honor. That was a highlight. I was gobsmacked. It's like, wow, you can believe in me to put your trust in those flies. And so I won't give away the pattern, but they did very well. I know they brought home a silver medal. I think the first time that a Canadian team has medaled. And I know Kathy did very well. I'm trying to remember back. I think she placed third out of all those fly fisher women.
Wow.
So tremendous job there. And that was just an honor to be part of something so cool and to be asked to do that. So
right.
That kind of ignited the fire right there in the fall.
How many? Okay. And, so this is, let's not talk specifics, but how many flies did you have to tie? Like, are we talking?
Oh, they took it easy on me. I think I tied up, 4 dozen maybe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't exhausting, but I'm not a commercial tire. So that, but, you know, when I was staring down 13 plus flies, I was like, hey, I'm over this. I got a long way to go yet. But yeah, it worked out really well and super happy for the result. I know that team fished so hard and worked so hard for those medals. So that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, they were pretty and stoked then, about that one for sure.
Yeah, it was a wicked result. And then kind of after that, I've been fishing a lot with a great friend of mine now that I met at the BC Outdoor Show last year. His name is Ruben Breichreitz, mm-hmm. a local Vernon boy as well. And so we hit it off right away at the show and like, Ruben, where's home for you? And he's like, oh, I'm Vernon. And I was like, what? Did we just become best friends? And so we've been out on the water, and he's, for those of you that don't know Ruben, he's a exceptional fly casting instructor. He's a great fly tire. He teaches courses. He's written some books. He's done a lot for the fly fishing industry. So he's a sales rep. He represents a lot of great fishing companies. So he's been a great mentor of mine, taking me under his wing and critiquing my casting stroke. And I'm like, Ruben, you know, pick me apart, man. I am putty in your hands, and you know, don't make me cry. But he's given me some quality instruction with our time on the water. So that's been awesome. Like, you know, you meet some great people that are so selfless with their time, and they're willing to instill that. And, you know, I still consider myself a youngster in the industry, but
sounds like somebody we should reach out to. Thanks for throwing that out there. It's good.
Yeah.
His name has come up.
Such a generous guy. He's become a great friend of mine, and I'm very thankful for his time and his tutelage there. So that was a great sort of spring and summer and fall, a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, the winter tying season came up, and I started to get figuring out a little bit of, you know, macro photography and taking some better pictures than what I had been previous. So mm-hmm. That was a few months over winter there, really working on not only fly tying skills, but photography. So often there's some great fly tires out there, and they post stuff on different groups, but I find it's the photos that let their flies down. You know, it's beautiful craftsmanship, but if they don't have a quality photo of it, mm-hmm. it's tough in this digital age to, you know, really see the ins and the outs of those flies. So
what?
I spent a little bit of time like working on those skills. And so
can you throw us a few tidbits? Like, because that's something that I struggle with. Like, I'll be super proud of a pattern, and then I take out my iPhone and I'm just like, I don't know if it's lighting or just the camera I'm using, but any small tips that you can kind of pass along that would maybe up somebody's game in that department?
Yeah, you hit it on the head there with something that you mentioned, like lighting. An essential part is the lighting. So I'm an electrician by trade, and I was redoing our shop and garage with some more industrial type lighting, and I found some LED fluorescent strips lighting. They're like 8 foot long, replacing like the old fluorescent tubes. And these things give off like 10,000 lumens. So in layman's terms, really, really bright light.
Right.
So I started putting those into my shop and my garage. And I was like, okay, I'm going to save one of these for my fly tying bench. So I've got it rigged up overhead. It's blinding if you look at it, but it really brightens up the space. And then I have my desk lamp as well, like an LED, sort of an adjustable arm fly tying light that a lot of us use on our desk. And that was a big game changer, because then I was able to see like such detail in the flies. And then before, when I'd take my photos, my desk lamp would really wash it out. It would overexpose it right on top or certain parts of it.
Right.
So having just a well-lit room really made those photos come to life. So that's kind of step one. And then step two was when you're taking a photo, using a stand, like having your phone on a stand, even putting a timer on your photo or on your camera, so that when you take it, you have either 2 seconds or 5 seconds delay to kind of adjust and make sure that no shakes are going on.
Right.
And so that's a really good tip as well, is to make sure that not only the fly is stationary, but that your phone is as well, or whatever camera you're using. So that really cleaned it up. And then it's just spending some time with photo editing. So getting rid of, if there's glare, you want to make sure that you have a decent backdrop that works well, kind of bringing that fly to life. So what I've found works well is even just some poster board, some like black poster board. I like using black. It's a little bit more, I don't know, artistic in my mind. You can use white as well, but black really just absorbs that light.
Yeah.
And your fly is the last thing that's left to be in focus. So the camera can really hone in on that. And then, yeah, just messing around with a little bit of editing. And I try to keep it as accurate to the real deal as possible. You don't want to, increase a ton of contrast or saturation or anything like that. You want it to give a true representation of what you've tied. So, yeah, you mess around with it, spend a little bit of time, and you can really come up with some cool things.
Are you using your phone, or do you have like a SLR? What are you using for the actual pics?
No, I'm not that far down the rabbit hole yet. I just use, I think I've got a Samsung S21 or something like that. So that the camera's adequate. It's pretty good. But I haven't ventured down the photography realm yet. That might come next winter. We'll see.
Well, I know you're also doing shows. So tell us about the BC Outdoor Show, because I know you were a featured tire on the weekend there. How did that go, and what were you tying up?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. That was an exciting time to be invited back. Phil Rowley, he was the one that was organizing all us crazy fly tires and arts and crafts. And so him and Mike Mitchell, they put on an amazing fly tying demonstration. I know that was one of the key attractors for the event. And luckily enough, I didn't wear out my welcome last year. So they said, Brandon, would you be interested again this year? So I jumped at the chance. I booked it off of work, and we made a good family trip of it down to Chilliwack. It's about a 4-hour drive from where I am.
Nice.
And this year I wanted to focus on early season, like ice off essentials, I called my sessions. So, you know, everyone's chomping at the bit to get on the water. And I focused on a couple key insects that are in the waters, majority of the waters year round, dragonfly nymphs and boatmen or back swimmers. So those were two patterns that I found very, very successful the previous spring, and then in the fall, really late season. And I tied up a cool, I called it a rib darner dragonfly nymph. And I had a few other names in mind with a rib sort of vein, but I thought, okay, let's keep it kosher for the kids. We won't go too crazy with that. So kept a PG, and that fly was a cool creation. I have to thank again, Ruben shared me a pattern that he'd gotten from one of his, I believe recently, deceased friends in Kamloops, a phenomenal fly tire. And he, from my understanding, had passed away, and these were kind of a few creations that he'd given to Ruben. Wow. And they were a foam, it was kind of like a ribbed foam dragonfly nymph pattern that floats up, so you can fish it on a type 7 sinking line with a short leader, like right off the bottom, as you would like a Gomphus deer hair pattern. And I said, Ruben, like, can you send me some pictures of that pattern? I'd love to take a spin at it and put my own sort of artistic creativity on that. And it worked out really well. Oh, so similar following like a foam underbody to what Stanton Jack kind of revolutionized the dragon mm-hmm. nymph thing for Stillwaters. He does some amazing patterns there. And so kind of blending that one in with a detached ribbed foam body that I actually use I'll heat up some channel lock pliers. So I'll heat up the grooves on that and press the foam against it.
Really?
And you can have some really cool designs with that. The sky's the limit to what you can create. So the outdoor show was fun because I whip out a big butane torch and I've got a leather glove on, and Phil Rowley's looking at me like, what are you going to do with that? Just for theatrics, you could use a lighter as well. But I was like, no, let's have fun with this.
You're doing something right. If you're making, Phil nervous, you're doing something right. That's not easy.
He's a loose cannon to begin with, so it's pretty fun.
So that's a good little tip right there. No, yeah. I was going to say that's a good tip. I have not seen that done. I unfortunately didn't make the show this year because we had stuff going on, but that's a good tip.
Yeah, it was kind of a mind-blowing moment, like, oh, man, yeah. I'm sure it's been done. Like, I don't want to take any credit for that because I did steal it from another fly fisherman, but I'm sure it's been done all over the place for different patterns, and that's what's so cool is, like, you know, as you progress in your journey, it might have been something that's been done for 20, 30 years, but if it's new to you, then it's like, mm-hmm. oh, man, I got to get on the water and test this new thing out, and so... Yeah, there's always things to learn and different, you know, I'll speak about the outdoor show there for a second. Like, it was so cool seeing so many different tires with different patterns that work for them. You know, their different tips and tricks and skill sets. Like, I sat through a lot of sessions and just was a sponge, like soaking it all up. And mm-hmm. one of my favorites was John Wilkinson put on his session was about, like, UK flies, so stuff from across the pond there when they were in Islay in Scotland.
Right.
And so he had brought a lot of those patterns back and was generous enough to showcase that during his session. And I was just, my jaw was probably on the floor, just like, wow, the creativity, the use of, you know, tons of different hackles and feathers. It was pretty cool. And that stuff works over here as well. Yeah. Just maybe less common or less popular.
Well, and I think sometimes that's why they work so well, because the fish on some of these heavily pressured lakes have not seen them like they have probably in, you know, in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. I think we got talking about even like the old school patterns of, you know, throw a Red Dock Spratly out there or whatever, you know, is 20, 30 years old.
Yeah.
A lot of guys now, they're so focused on like chronomids, leeches, like kind of the staples. But those things worked back then and the fish aren't accustomed to those anymore too. So mm-hmm. chances are they're still going to work today.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
That's so true. So you were tying at the show. Was it a really good turnout this year? I heard it was pretty darn busy around there.
Yeah. I just was able to tie on the Saturday and the Sunday session, so I missed the Friday night. I know Phil Rowley had a tying session. Brian Chan had a good session, attracted a large audience there for both of those. Mm-hmm. Saturday was crazy busy, and like what was neat this season was every fly tire's presentation had like pretty much a full audience. It was awesome throughout the day. Didn't really matter what time of day it was full. Participants were captively listening. It was really cool. Last year, I find it was hit or miss depending on the time of the day. Some people would go for lunch, you know, there's lulls to it. Mm-hmm. But Saturday was steady, and then Sunday was unfortunately a beautiful day down at the coast. So it was kind of the first taste of spring for a lot of people. So there was a lot of you know, patrons that would have typically gone to the show, I think, that were out you know, fixing up their yards, doing the spring cleanup.
Right.
But Sunday was steady as well. It was busy. Like, I had for my session a pretty full audience. I had my daughter and my wife come in and join me and take in a little bit of the session there. So that was fun interacting with them.
Do you find, Brandon, when you tie, so let's say you're tying at home, you don't think twice about it, but when you have people in front of you, does that really change? Like, I mean, there's got to be some nerves. Do you feel that when you're tying? I always wonder that.
Yeah. It's an uncanny thing. Like, in front of people, you get kind of the adrenaline rush from that, and that's not necessarily the best thing if you're doing a really technical tie. So on the Saturday there, like with that foam rib darner dragonfly nymph, I found my hands were quivering, like they were shaking, and usually, you know, I'm pretty steady hand at the vise. So I just had to really just focus on thread wraps. I'd focus on one person in the audience as I was presenting it to them, so to speak, and then right. You glance around, you know, you interact with the others, but if you could focus on that one person, it helps just kind of ground you, I think. And so that was I found a quick way to shed the nerves and shake the nerves. And then, you know, you make jokes, and if you know, luckily I didn't break a thread. I brought Semperfly's Nano Silk to tie with, just in case, to give me some extra freedoms there. Yeah. And but yeah, you know, if you forget a step or whatever, you laugh it off, you make a joke. When I brought out the butane torch there, everyone was having a chuckle, and that seemed to kind of lighten the, you know, whatever apprehension or anxiety that I had. And then Sunday was just kind of like, I was looking forward to that next session. Saturday was kind of the dress rehearsal, and then Sunday was like, okay, I got this. This is just, let's have fun with this, right? And put on a good show.
Yeah, I love it. I like hearing that, and I like hearing you talk about it, because it's something I have been asked to do a few times, and I kind of always backed away from it because I thought it's weird. I even find, even when, like, say a group of us are tying with video, it's different than when you're just doing it on your own. You know what I mean? It's like if you play a song on the guitar and there's nobody around, it's no big deal. But when all of a sudden you got, you know, people in front of you, it changes.
Yeah,
things,
you know? The stakes aren't as high, I guess. You know, it's not too crazy. I had a similar experience where I was in the comfort of my own tying studio, if you will. Yeah. And I was approached by the BC Wildlife Federation to put on a learn to fly tie series. And they've done a remarkable job with their Learn to Fish, Learn to Hunt series. That's free for all the BC Wildlife Federation members. Mm-hmm. So I had an email from Steve Hamilton that I guess he came across some of my patterns there online and said, Brandon, would you be interested in putting on this series for us? And just jumped at the opportunity to kind of share my craft or my, you know, limited skills with whoever will listen. And that was an added dynamic because we did live recorded Zoom tying sessions. So it's, you know, it was like you're recording with your video. I had a couple cameras set up, one sort of a selfie camera on me to talk and introduce. And then I had a macro camera set up right on the fly. But even then, you know, you're talking to a live audience, you get one kick at the can, so to speak, or you could, I guess, edit it out. But it was like, hey, we're recording, you're live, take it away, Brandon. Mm. And it's like, oh, dear Lord, okay, watch what I say. And yeah,
I love it.
So that was a pretty cool experience. I took everyone from beginner stages of these are the required essential fly tying tools that mm-hmm. you'll use. This is your vise. This is what to look at and quality of the instruments and things. And then the first session, we did simple with a proven bloodworm pattern. And then the next session, I did all about chronomids. I tied up a variety of tournaments, two volumes of that. The first one was my beloved Straggle Leg Scud, that I swear by that pattern, and then Brian Chan's Ruby Eyed Leech. So I demonstrated a nice hack job of that to get people, well known of that pattern if they haven't already heard of it. And then the second volume, we did Dragonfly Nymphs and Damselfly Nymphs. And then the last session, I did a tractor pattern. So if none of the other patterns works, then we'll give you some boobies and blobs and a few different variations of those and how to fish them. So
yeah,
it was kind of the whole still water content in five sessions. So that was a pretty cool feature that they did.
Are you a big guy with the blobs and the boobies? Is that something you fish a lot of these days?
There's a time and a place, I would say. I'd say with boobies, they I'll sometimes start the day with that just to get a throat sample. If it's a heavily pressured lake, sometimes you can trigger that sort of reactionary bite or that predatory strike.
Sure.
So those work, there's a time and a place for them. And then blobs, I had good success with a couple patterns. Like I'll have a few different variations in my fly box. I'll have some that have tungsten beads on those blobs so that they're strictly fished under an indicator and just kind of dead drift, or if there's a wind chop, they work pretty good. And then I'll as well have some with some blobs with a little bit of like a marabou tail, either a glass bead or just a thread head on them. And then I'll use, an intermediate sink, a type 3 or type 5 sink, and depending on the depth of the water column, and aggressively strip those ones. And usually you can coax a fish out of wherever they're hiding and then get a throat sample and kind of dial it in. So it's maybe I would say a first resort in a sense, but also a last resort. I like to be a little bit more imitative in my approach.
I got to tell you, it's so, and I'm every single year, you think I would learn, but it's always the same. I've been tying all winter. I just got the itch to get some chironomids going, but but you get to the lake, it's 45 degrees or maybe 50 at the high end. And it's like, there's no hatches going on. So you got to revert to, like you mentioned before, what is in the water year round, and those blobs, if they're taking like the little copepods or,
like the Daphnia or zooplankton. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like those things work then. And same with, what I've come to realize, and I never really thought about it, like leeches, like in the right size and the right material tied sparsely enough with a tungsten bead, that could be some Daphnia if it's the right color.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, we don't always think it's what we're fishing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you raised such a good point there with, like you mentioned, leeches. And a lot of guys, that's like some of the first stuff that they tie because they're relatively easy. And I've had a love-hate relationship with leeches over the years. Like a lot of friends, they swear by them. They have great days on the water with their leeches. And I'm such like a perfectionist with my tire to like to my detriment too, because for leeches, the scruffier, the more sparse, like there's so many different variations of a same leech you could tie.
Yeah.
You could tie it balanced. You could tie it, long, like a good, 3-inch leech works very well in one of my local waters. And I made the mistake of just fishing tiny micro leeches and the fish weren't interested. I'm like, man, what is going on? And then I heard from another source like, oh no, you should try this. And they did very well on longer leeches. So it's like there's so many options just in the realm of leeches too, like the different color spectrums, the dubbing blends you can get now are just endless. So it's something that I'm learning now. Okay, the efficiency of just fishing leeches and varying your different types can be very productive.
Amen. Well, I think that's a really good transition into what I'd love to talk to you about next. We've got Brandon Mulzan on the line out of Vernon. Tying is my vice. Check him out. He's tying up some beautiful patterns. Pro staff with Dr. Slift, Dr. Slick, tying instructor and guide at Interior Fly Fishing Company. Let's transition into the guiding thing now, because I know this came to light for some of us not that long ago, and we're so stoked to see that you kind of taking your passion kind of to the next level and are really taking it to the water. So why don't you walk us through how you got with the guys at Interior and kind of walk us through that journey so far?
Yeah, that sounds great, Mark. Yeah, I've been in contact with the owners of Interior Fly Fishing Co. for a couple of years now. Reached out to Brett Pennington, I think, first, and you know, maybe I saw him on the water with his sweet boat and the nice interior decals on the side, and kind of so reached out to him. I've been chatting with Casey Groves, the other owner, mm-hmm. and prior to them taking over the business, I was I'd say good messenger buddies with Jordan Ulrich, and he he did so much for the Stillwaters community and still involved, but he's I know pursuing a lot of golfing and a mm-hmm. phenomenal golfer from the sounds of it. So, this is going back maybe 3 years, just before I started tying, I reached out to Jordan and had a frustrating spring. I couldn't quite figure out the Stillwater stuff. I was raised just, okay, they're either on dry flies or they're not in the area. They're not biting today, I guess. And so I said, Jordan, you seem to be very successful, like walking me through how to approach a lake. And he was so generous with his time. He would respond so promptly to me and help me along the way. And he really was one of my mentors. He doesn't realize the impact that he had for my fishing career, but a huge thank you to Jordan. So
love it.
I knew the Interior name, like he built up a great business. He was in head first, and then when Casey and Brett took over, I got to know them just sending some emails back and forth. And it was actually at the BC Outdoors show, looking back on my messages, when Casey reached out to me about my scuds that I was demonstrating last year at the show, mm-hmm. and asking, if I'd be interested in tying flies for them. And I'm like, man, I'm a slow tire. Like, I don't know. I know my limits, and I know that would frustrate me or stress me out trying to keep up to the demand. Mm-hmm. So I humbly declined. I said, listen, I'm not a commercial tire. I'll try to support you guys whatever way I can. That conversation, we kind of just fished the season, and then it came full circle. I got it marked on my calendar, January 22nd. I get an email from Casey and, hey, hope you're doing well, and this is what we're up to, and was wondering if you would like to come on board and kind of spearhead a fly tying division for us, in so many words. And so we've been chatting back and forth of what that kind of looks like, and then as well asked if I was interested in guiding for them, and I'm like, man, yeah, like 100%, sign me up. I'm still working full-time at my retail management day job, and so I'm like, I've got vacation days, I've got bank days that I'll do whatever I can to help out and just tiptoe into the water, see if it's something that I like and something that fills me up. And and then we've been plotting and scheming. So for fly tying, we've got some fly tying in person, like courses in the works.
Yeah.
And then as well, I'm going to be offering Zoom fly tying lessons, and that can be, worldwide. Anyone that wants to learn, that'll be available. And then doing some fly casting instruction as well for beginners, just putting to practice what what I've learned and how to learn the right habits and get people starting out on the right foot instead of struggling with inefficiencies and things. We want to make sure that we're expediting the learning curve for a lot of people and continuing to pay it forward. And I think that's what Jordan did so good, such a good job at, is just paying it forward, helping others and making this fly fishing industry really about like community and brotherhood, and that's what it's all about. Like with Interior Fly Co. there, I've never met such genuine, generous, just good people. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate to have a little fly fishing derby a couple of weekends ago for the Easter long weekend.
I heard about this.
Yeah, out on a local lake around Kamloops there, and there was like, it was my first time hanging out with these guys, and they had their core group of about, I think there was 11 or 12 of us. And you know, I pull up to the place and I get out of my truck, and one of the guys in particular comes, you know, right over and like, "Brandon, you know, it's truly an honor to meet you. I've been watching your videos," and just like, holy cow, you know, and everyone's just welcoming me into their community, this brotherhood. So I'm just like, I've never experienced anything like that. Just the generosity and the friendship that can come as a result of like our crazy addiction for fly fishing and fly tying.
Yeah, that's amazing. It sounds to me too like you're doing something a little different there. I really like the idea of the tying kind of ambassador kind of, it kind of completes the circle, I would imagine, with the guiding as well, right?
Yeah. We've talked about offering kind of some weekend guided retreats where, I'll hold a fly tying class on like the Friday night, and we'll tie flies, and then the next morning we'll go out on our boats and we'll fish those patterns that we tied the night before, and just introduce people right from starting point to like, to catching fish on their own fly. I know for myself, that was such a pivotal milestone or one of those core memories. It's like, you know, catching that first fish on a fly you've created. And I know a lot of people can relate to that. Just the feeling of pure, just, you know, excitement, satisfaction. If you keep fish for dinner, coming home with that prize that you've caught from something you've created. And there's no other feeling like that. It's really cool.
I love it. That reminds me a little bit of, like Brent and the gang at Stillwaters doing their vids, and they're out at the lake and they're tying the night before and having a few cold ones and then going out.
And I think that's such an attractive thing, is like the, you know, it's the community behind it. I know for a few of the groups, like I can't thank the Stillwaters group enough with Brent behind the helm of that, and like they've created that community, and that's I think what attracts so many people to fly fishing, is you're not just out for your own neck, but you want to see others get into fish, you want to help others, and hopefully inspire the next generation too, these youngsters coming up. And I got kind of a couple cool stories about my own daughter in that realm, if we do have time, Mark.
Oh, well, hold on. We're going to go to that pink Snoopy rod story. I was watching that.
Yeah, that was incredible.
What was that all about? I was trying to figure out what lake you're on. It looked like looked like Okanagan Lake to me, buddy.
Yeah, it was a big body of water. That one I can share. That was Mabel Lake.
Oh,
one of my favorites early season. So the fish are cruising the shoals looking for food sources, and so kind of backtracking to that. Hope everyone's sitting down and has a refreshing beverage or something as they're listening, because this is a cool little story. But so Frankie's been, that's my daughter's name, is Frankie. So she just turned 4, and she's taken an interest. She sees me sitting at the fly tying desk there, and Dada, can I help? Can I try? And so we've tried, and she's broken threads, and she's, you know, she reorganizes my very meticulously placed materials and my drawers. And just, you know, she loves pink and purple. I love purple. And so I always find those things strewn about. But I said, Frankie, let's tie your first flies. So she was sitting on my lap and just wiggling nonstop, and how 4-year-olds are. Yeah. So we tied up a couple sort of transitional blobs using this is Semperfly's new material that they call Eggstatic. So you can get it, I believe, in like 8mm or 15mm width strands. It's beautiful stuff for blobs. When it's wet, it's very similar to that like slush jelly from FNF. Yep. So it works like a charm. So of course she wanted pink, so we do some pink blobs with a little bit of a white transition to them. And then she's asking, hey, can we go out fishing? And so we took my mom out fishing one time, and we had a ball on the water. This was a couple of weeks ago. We were breaking ice at the launch with my Princecraft V haul, so she got a kick out of that, just plowing through that, and we had a great day on the water. She had a boat nap, but unfortunately we didn't get into any fish that day. It was right at ice off, and maybe I just maybe I'm not the best fishing guide, I don't know, but I let her down that day. And so we had the opportunity just this past weekend where my wife had the day free, and so her and Frankie and I went out to Mabel Lake, and it was the first time I'd realized that my wife had fished with some of my flies. So I tied on a beautiful egg-sucking leech pattern, kind of a variation of the vampire leech with some UV brill and black marabou tail and some crystal flash in the tail. And yep. I'm like, okay, this is a beautiful balanced one. I know they target these type of egg-sucking leeches in early season. So we get her rod all fixed up in maybe 5 minutes, and she's into a fish and all excited. And I'm just getting, I think, Frankie's rod ready. And so we're fishing long leaders as well, like 20-foot leaders suspended under an indicator. And so the indicator, it's one of those quick-release ones, and it doesn't pop. So I was like, okay, babe, I have to release this indicator. And then in doing so, I knocked off her fish, and she didn't let me live it down. You know, I was in the doghouse there. But I was like, okay, let's get it back out there. Yeah. I was like, we're going to get you another fish. Don't worry, you know. And then so I get Frankie's rod ready. We're having a great time. And then my wife hooks into a beautiful fish, and I see it come out of the water multiple times. I'm like, hey, like, let's not mess this up. Brandon, be smart. And luckily, this fish was strong enough that it popped the indicator. And Frankie at the time was saying, hey, like, Dada, can you hold my rod? And I was like, well, I'm filming, Mom. I'm trying to do the net job. And, you know, pure chaos ensues. And and Frankie, I think she was trying to get her rod back in the rod holder. But I just hear this splash. And I was like, oh, no. I know exactly what that sound was. She looks over and she's like, there's my rod. I was like, yeah, there's your rod floating down to the bottom. Okay. Or sinking down to the bottom. And then, so anyway, you know, that's one thing. And we end up, I focus on the fish, and we end up landing the nice fish for my wife. So she's all happy. And then Frankie's like, oh, I really miss my fly, or I really miss my rod, my fishing rod. And I was like, yeah, that's what happens, buddy, when you throw it in the water, you know? And she's like, that's okay, Dada. We'll buy another one. And I was like, yeah, okay.
No problem.
No concept of money or anything yet. But, and then so it was about half an hour or so, and she's kind of getting antsy. And I said, okay, Frankie, you can help with the next fish, you know, on the fly rod, you can help reel it in. And, well, I miss my fly rod. Okay. So I think, what can I do? What can I do? I look over the side of the boat, and I see there's a little bit of we had an indicator on there. And so that's floating up, you know, a few feet off the bottom. I can vaguely make out where the rod is. And I look in my my boat bag, and I'm like, oh, I've got these beautiful Dr. Slick mitten scissor clamps. Little plug for Dr. Slick there. And so when they unhinge, when you clamp them, they open up, and they have two handles that kind of are at like a U shape almost. And I'm like, this could work. So I gather up some of the anchor rope, and I rig that up, and I'm like, yeah, I have kind of two curved hook points. I wonder if I can just like hook either the rod or some of the line. And so I'm jigging for a fly rod. I'm like, this is never going to work, but you never know. Dr. Slick is wonderful, so I'm sure they won't let me down. And and sure enough, about 5 minutes of jigging, and I bring up her, it's a Rapunzel Shakespeare rod. So that was a
Rapunzel.
Birthday gift to her.
All right.
Rapunzel. So it's pink, and it's white, and it's just, it's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful fly rod, or a beautiful fishing rod for a four-year-old. So she's ecstatic. Dada, you got my fishing rod. Yay. And then now she's like, okay, game on. Like, it's her turn to catch a fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then so, you know, fast forward maybe about another half an hour or so, and that kind of wears off. And Dada, I'm hungry. I'm like, well, you just dummied a half bag of cheese puffs and an apple and a cheese string and fruit snacks. I'm like, why are you still hungry? So, okay, well, Dad's going to fire up his camping stove, and we're going to make some gourmet hot dogs for the ladies and perfect. Give them the true guiding experience, right? And then as I'm just getting the hot dogs ready, my wife says, oh, Frankie, your bobber's down, your indicator's down. And then so she quickly reacts and sets the hook and has Frankie hold on to the rod, and Frankie's got her little pet unicorn in one hand. She's trying to reel with the other hand. I was like, Frankie, put down your unicorn for right now. Or, you know, get two hands on that rod. And yeah, long story short, then she does a great job of reeling it in. And I captured everything on video. So as I net the fish, I've never heard sounds out of this child. Just, you want to hear pure excitement and elation from a four-year-old catching a fish. It's by far the best fishing moment of my life. Like, I've caught a few fish in my day, but that one trumps them all, just seeing that pure form of excitement. And that was a pretty incredible moment. And then that night, as I'm tucking her into sleep, she says, Dada, can you take me fishing again tomorrow? So I'm like, hey, I think she's officially hooked. Yeah. We've got some trips planned for sure.
That's funny. My buddy's like, you got to check out Brandon's video of his daughter catching a fish. And of course I did just that. So that's on that's on Tying Is My Vice on Instagram and on your Facebook, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I posted. Yeah. I think it was a reel, and they share that on Facebook as well as Instagram. So I think like within one day it was over 1,400 plays or something. And I'm like, man, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's not about all the likes. Don't get me wrong there, but it's about that youthful wonder. I think I still have that every time I'm out on the water. Like, it brings me back to the early days, sitting on a dock or in a, you know, a little rubber dinghy and fishing with my dad, and just that youthful wonder of what's under the surface and what the day might bring. And I think that video just sums it up. Like, I still get that excited when I catch a fish, you know?
Oh, yeah. Amen. Me too. And not only is it Dr. Slick Pro Staff, we could go like Rapunzel Pro Staff. Is that a thing yet?
You got to reach out to Disney and see what we can work out here.
I love it. It's awesome, man. So it's so good to hear your voice and catch up with you. And I'm always cheering for you, man. You're always doing something exciting, and everything you're doing is so genuine and kind of organic. I'm always amazed what you're up to, man. You started tying those damn chironomids with those wing buds, and now you got me on that train. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah, you know? Well, thank you, Mark. That's a very nice compliment, I know, with the with those wing buds. Like, yeah, they've been out there for a while. I know a lot of great tires. They went the artistic route, same as me. Like, it's got to be perfect. And now, you know, they're doing thread thoraxes, and they're catching just as many, if not more. So I think it's more of just my neurotic sense of, oh, if it doesn't have wing buds, it's not going to fish well, you know. But something to say about just fishing with confidence.
Yeah.
Whatever flies you tie,
yeah,
you know, at that level in your journey. Like, I remember when I first started out, I thought my chironomids were the bee's knees, and they caught fish. Don't get me wrong. They did a great job. But looking back on them now, like, you know, 3 years later, mm-hmm. it's like, holy, how did those ever catch fish? And so it's cool documenting your journey and thinking back, oh man, I thought I was God's gift to fly tying back then, but I was such a hack. And now, you know, and then fast forward 5 years, it'll be like, Brandon, you're just embarrassing yourself putting that content out.
But you're right, though. And that to me is how we get better, right? It's like the flies that you were happy with 6 years ago, you probably wouldn't even put in a box now. You know what I mean? And 6 years from now, maybe it'll be the same. Who knows? That curve keeps going and the materials keep changing. And and that's what I love. It seems like a lot of people are really pushing the needle all the time.
Yeah.
Just like, how can we do this better? And how can we get more? Those fish don't stand a chance.
No, they certainly don't. Like, they're sure they're getting smarter and they're seeing a lot of top end creations, but, fly manufacturing material, like, companies have come such a long way. I know I'm amazed. You know, at least once a year, Semperfly does they call it Fly Jam, mm-hmm. where they release all their next year's materials, their next creations. And I know Andy over there, he's like the mad scientist. He's always pushing the envelope of what can be created and how it flows and how it shines and different colors and applications. And so working with them has been incredible. It's like Christmas morning, these Fly Jam things. And you open up these packages, like, you know, packages upon packages of new materials, and then the creative juices start going, and you're like, hey, what can I make out of this? How many innovative ties can I make? So we're so fortunate, like with great companies like them, and yeah. Shout out to Togans as well. They do an awesome job of keeping up with, you know, the latest companies, the latest technologies, and our job becomes that much easier as fly tyers. I said when I was doing the BC Wildlife thing, I said, guys, like when you're first starting out, buy the best tools you can afford, and buy the best materials that you can afford, including, you know, your tying vise. When I started out, I had a cheaper one just because I didn't know if I'd really like it or not. Mm-hmm. But I quickly upgraded to something that was comfortable, something, you know, good tools that helped make my flies better, and then good materials. It's really tough to hide bad materials on a fly. You know, that's what makes the fly speak. And so you gotta make sure that you're investing in quality stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you already gave me some ideas tonight. I'm sitting here looking at my tying wall, and you were talking about those egg sucking leeches, and then you threw in the slush jelly. Yeah. And I thought that would be a perfect head for an egg sucking. Oh, you use chenille all the time, right?
Yeah, you're on to something there for sure.
I'm looking at it going, that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Looks like you give me some work to do tonight.
Yeah. Sorry. But, no, it's great. You know, we have these conversations, and, you know, Mark, you've been a part of a Zoom tying night or so where I'll have that with some friends, and you throw around different ideas. You see what everyone else is tying, and then you take that, you run with it, or you do a different spin on it. And it's just all about pushing each other's creativity and yeah, the community as well. It helped give me something to look forward to in the winter time. Like it was a nice winter. I wouldn't say it was a bad winter, but still it felt like a long time between fishing seasons. And so that was the saving grace, was coming home to my vise. You know, you call up some friends or have a video conference chat or have some people over for a arts and crafts night. And it makes the winter tolerable, and then you can dream of days on the water and what patterns you're going to use. And it's wonderful.
I find it funny though, during the open water season, my tying suffers because I would much rather be, if I have the time, on the water than at the vise. Although I do love being at the vise, don't get me wrong. But I find Brandon, when the winter season hits and everything starts to ice up, and let's say we're going into end of November, I get excited for tying because I know I'm going to commit. I'm going to fill the boxes. And then be able to spend more time on the water, if that makes sense. I know that sounds weird, but
no, that's so accurate. I know the feeling. You're like you're getting your soldiers ready for battle. You're getting your troops built and your armies created. Yep. And then when ice off hits, it's game on. And exactly. You try to spend as much time as you can on the water. I find, like, you know, you take throat samples and then you take notes and you're like, okay, well, I didn't have this particular pattern, so I'll go home tonight, whip this up. I'm sure that would have, you know, caught a few more fish had I just had that one pattern in my box. we're our own worst enemies, just neurotic that way.
I tried two brand new patterns 2 days ago on a lake that you and I were talking about before we jumped on this call, and nothing was going on. We put these things on and they were lights out, and I'd never fished them before. One, I think you called it a police car.
Awesome.
But the other one was a bloodworm that John Kent posted, and it was like a real rustic bloodworm. I can't remember the name of it, but
so
you'll like this. So we're sitting here, nothing's happened, nobody's, and there's a lot of boats on the lake, and nobody around us is doing anything. And I says to Buddy, I said, what if we, because we're printing fish underneath us, I go, what if we do the dirty dangle? And but we're fishing indies, and I'm like, I'm too lazy to change my line over. So I literally let my floating line sink below my indie to exactly, okay. I put some like hemostats on, got it right to the bottom, and then brought it back up, let it go down. The second it got down there, it just took off like zzz. He's looking at me, and I'm just like going, what have we done here?
Yeah, you're
like,
on the sun.
It's like, okay, so now we're doing the dirty dangle with a floating line. This is bizarre.
Well, that's, I think that's the thing. Like, if it's, if it's not working, if you're marking fish, you know there's fish in the area, you got to change one of the variables, whether that's, you know, depth is a great way to start. You know, size, I would say, would be next most important. Like if it's, you know, if you're fishing chironomids, depth, size, profile, color. You know, to be honest, I've had good success. Whatever color, you know, you put on, you get those other variables right. Sure, there's finicky fish, but I think we spend so much time on like, oh, I've got to have thousands of colors of chironomids. You need the essentials for sure. Like you mentioned there, have a good like bloodworm imitative pattern, like a red, brown, maroon, you know, something and maybe a little bit of flash to it. And you fish that right off the bottom, more often than not, that's a fly I'll stick with all day. But I think, yeah, we get so stuck in our ways of just, okay, change the fly. But I've learned even like change maybe your retrieve. Change, you know, if you're fishing under an indicator and doing just a static approach, give it a slow hand twist retriever. Give it a little twitch every now and then. It's usually after the twitch that you can turn some heads and you see some bobber down moments. So.
We were fishing shallow water the other day with my buddy, and it was pretty quiet, but a few guys were catching fish, and I looked over. I said, look, every guy that's onto a fish has an orange indie. So you take that chartreuse off, you put an orange one on.
Yeah,
shit's gonna happen. I don't know.
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Well, look, brother, I really appreciate you taking the time as always. And if you've got any you know, tying seminars, or you've got any things going on with Interior Fly Fishing Company, just please reach out. We'd be happy to promote it. And I wish you, as always, an amazing season on and off the water, and keep up the good work, man.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yeah, likewise. You're a good friend of mine ever since we met at the outdoor show, and you're right away, hey, Brandon, what size t-shirt do you wear? I got to get you one. And I was like, holy cow, this is now my Uncle Mark. Yeah. So really,
what was it about
really
the drunk the family reunion without the drunk uncles, if I recall?
Oh, yeah. Just like a family reunion, but where everyone loves each other and there's less drunken uncles.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for your time, Mark. We'll see you on the water, hey?
We've been chatting with Brandon Molzen out of Vernon, British Columbia, Canada. Tying is my vice. Look him up on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Pro Staff with Dr. Slick, fly tying instructor and guide with Interior Fly Fishing Company, Pro Staff at Semperfly, Togans, Sage, Rio, Reddington, and Broken Tippet. Thanks for joining us, folks, this time around. We'll catch you next time.
The Fly Fishing 97 podcast is brought to you by theflycrate.com. Thank you for listening to the Fly Fishing 97 podcast. Your feedback matters. Let us know if there's a person or topic you'd like discussed. Email us at mark@flyfishing97.com. Until next time, tight lines, and we'll see you on the water.